5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hey, Nova Scotia. There are plenty of ways to get outdoors and show your local love this winter. Why not get outside for an adventure? You could hit the slopes at one of Nova Scotia's incredible ski hills, head out for a hike along the coast, or let all your stress just melt away at a Nordic spa. Visit NovaScotia.com for more great ideas and packages. And no matter how you choose to make the most of winter, be sure to stay safe and support local. Hey, Nova Scotia. Looking for ways to show your local love and have fun this winter? Why not visit some fabulous local boutiques and artisan studios? Dine in or get takeout from your favorite restaurant. Maybe hit up a local event or even indulge in a night away at a hotel, charming inn, or B&B. Visit NovaScotia.com for more great ideas and packages. And no matter how you choose to make the most of winter, be sure to stay safe and support local.
Yes. We don't actually have
Thank you. No, that was absolutely professional, and I completely blew it watching the pretty lights.
6 episodes in, I think. It's my turn to be professional.
Well, that's true in more ways than one this episode.
I know, I wrote a script.
Oh my god, he's got content. Hello!
It's so long. Welcome to the special two-parter episode where everyone discovers just how wordy Blake is.
Motherfucking longer than twice... my script.
I was worried. I was like, is this too short? Oh my god.
That is lovely. Word to Betty, your mother.
I love it. Yes, hello. Welcome to Tales from the Gutter. I am Mickey.
I'm Blake.
And I'm Brent.
And if you hear any increased audio quality, it is because we figured shit out.
If you hear decreased audio quality, it's because I can't stop fidgeting.
This is also a thing.
And my mic isn't clipped on. It's just like it's there.
Oh yeah, no, it's freestyling or whatever the hell that is.
And Brent's sick, so he might cough.
Yeah, I'm going to cough. I'm going to try to cough away from the microphone, but if I don't, that's just how it is.
Don't worry, we'll cut.
It'll be nice
out.
To have you in stereo though, because you're tall, so you sit the farthest from the microphone for comfort.
True.
But now we have like multi mics.
Multi mic.
Is there already a sequel to Magic Mike? Because if not, multi-mics?
There's Magic Mike XXL.
Okay, the next one has to be multi-mic.
Multi-mic.
And it's all about, like, group stripper activity.
I believe that's what XXL was.
I just think group stripper activity is, like, a great band name.
That's a good one. That is a good... Are there any strippers in your story today?
Oh, no. No, I don't think so. Unless, like, there's cabaret performers in, like, the late 30s, so there's probably some crossover.
That's decent.
But I think that's, like, the closest that we get.
I believe we both have cabaret performers in the episodes we have.
Oh, no. I hope we didn't overwrite each other.
No, I don't think we did, but we'll find out.
And we'll find out in a moment.
We'll find out.
So, I watched/slash listened to the last episode.
Yeah.
Which is very exciting because it's the first episode I've listened to. And it was great. I highly recommend everybody give it a listen.
Well, it's good that you recommend the show you're on. I have been for like 2.5
it's
years.
It's nice to finally get around to recommending the show that I've been on for a couple years. It's good. But yeah, I loved that. I loved the opening credits, and then I hated them because I realized that inadvertently the theme for my contribution finally to an episode is Bad Uncles. And so now the credits are going to say, I love that it says, you know, hosted by Mickey, but starring Blake and Brent. And so it's going to say, starring Blake and Brent, Bad Uncles. And I'm just like, oh, I'm glad our niece and nephew aren't old enough to make memes yet. That's good.
Where they'll find it 20 years down the line and be like, oh, yeah. Okay.
If the internet and us still exist 20 years down the line and they find it, I will have a good sense of humor about it.
Otherwise, hello, alien archaeologists.
Someday in the future, it'll be like, was that AI? Then that movie that
oh,
happened?
Yeah, no, that, yeah, yes, it was AI. Sorry, I completely blocked that movie.
I don't blame you. To, like, it's never the next Haley Joel Osment.
Oh, it's
God
never.
Bless you, Princess Caroline. Bad Uncles.
Bad Uncles.
So, we talked last time about, we refined the idea for the show a little bit.
Yeah.
And we talked about how it was historical goss.
Yeah.
How it was like historical tabloid stories, basically, which you and I know how to make a tabloid story.
God, yes.
Yeah, we've been there for those meetings.
Decent at being evil.
No, that's why we don't do it anymore. That's why we just go after, hopefully, the long departed, but we'll explain some of them are going to be the extremely recently departed.
We'll get to that.
But they get, here's the thing. In my opinion, they get my version of what I tried to always accomplish, which was the funny tabloid story.
Yeah.
The one where it's like, oh no, everything's going slightly off the rails, but everyone's heart's still in the right place, so it's fine.
More of a comedy of errors.
Exactly. Yeah. Although my opening line is pretty... It's kind of offensive. it's the motto for the hot goss segment, which we'll, I might as well get to now. It's, okay, so historical gossip. I had made a brag that I wanted to write my first script, finally.
Yeah.
And that I was going to do a triple header and do three shades of goss, where I was going to have hot goss about the recently deceased. Because the rule is everybody, or the rule is the principal has to be dead, I think,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Like, yeah. So hot goss is they have to be recently dead. And in the case of this week's episode, it's extremely recently dead. It's 2 days ago. So that's why, see, kids, it pays to procrastinate because sometimes the right people aren't dead yet.
There you go.
You gotta wait.
If you're lucky in life, the people that you want to die will just...
When one door
if you're lucky
closes,
enough, you'll live long
the
enough.
Doors.
There you go. You'll live long enough, but the people you want to write about will die just in time.
There you go.
Mm.
Always happens. Trust me. Mm-hmm. Always happens.
So the motto I came up with for the hot goss segment, because there was three temperatures of gossip. Mm. You know, hot goss about the very recently departed.
Tepid
as in
goss?
Wednesday.
Tepid goss.
Tepid or lukewarm goss, yeah. Which could really be any time, but presumably like a little distant. And then cold goss, which like, I admit, okay, 2/3 of the way through writing this script, the theme became apparent that it was going to be Bad Uncles. And all that kept rattling in my brain was Methuselah's uncle.
Oh my God.
And I was like, if there's any goss I can find about Methuselah's uncle, that would be great.
Frozen
but of course you
goss.
Can't, because that's way back. That's pre-glacial goss. But his name was Azrael.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Methuselah's uncle, who we all talk about to be older than old, because Methuselah was the oldest recorded man. Yeah, Methuselah actually had an uncle, and his name was Azrael.
Yeah.
And that's really all we know.
Azrael.
But it's nice.
That one's been a long time coming.
So I didn't go quite that far back.
Next time.
That was terrible. Next time.
Next time.
Yeah. But I did go back a bit. So this week, Bad Uncles. We have a fictional bad uncle. A fictional hilariously bad uncle. A controversial uncle.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. And then a legendarily bad uncle. Which I think you're going to spoil the segment, so withhold thyself if you can.
I will keep my trap shut.
And if you can't, it's fine. It's fine. We'll cut ahead a little bit, but like, and there's going to be a point where you're just going to be like, "Come on, you're hitting the audience over the head with it." Like, just let me say it, and obviously at that point you can chime in.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, the motto for the hot goss segment though was the goss can be old, but the body should be barely cold. Our condolences to the family. That last part's in brackets.
Oh,
really,
and it's legally necessary. Oh, that was a good one though.
What, it's legally necessary, thoughts and prayers?
The thing that came before that. Your title, it was good.
Oh, thanks.
It's a compliment.
Oh, no, the legally necessary.
That as well.
Yes, I know, that's the part I enjoyed. I figure our condolences to the family always has to be legally necessary. It's like, just to show that we actually mean well, even though we're about to poke fun at someone who's probably still, like, lying in view.
So if you want
to
see
services
dead
are probably scheduled for tomorrow.
Oh my
so
God.
Head on down to presumably somewhere in Los Angeles and say goodbye to Henry Zuckerman. All right. Our most recent dearly departed as of Wednesday. Buck Henry.
Buck Henry.
Buck Henry, an Oscar-nominated writer, actor, and director who died on Wednesday. I think Wednesday was the 8th. We'll
yes.
go with that.
Yeah.
January 8th at the age of 89. Okay. Buck was born Henry Zuckerman in 1930 in New York City. He was the son of a brigadier general / stockbroker and a silent film star.
Interesting.
Henry followed in his mother's acting footsteps when he debuted on Broadway at 15 in a play called Life with Father, which we're all very familiar with, I'm sure. I didn't bother to look it up. Someone else can. After college, Henry followed in his father's footsteps when he joined the army to serve in the Korean War. Rather than serving on the front in Korea, Henry spent the war combining both his parents' passions by serving the troops as an entertainer, performing for soldiers stationed in Germany as part of the 7th Army Repertory Company.
Huh.
Yes, that was how he served his nation, which I haven't served my nation, so I'm not going to make fun of him, but I enjoy that he spent the Korean War in Germany performing plays.
It's definitely, it takes all kinds.
It does. I like it. Everybody contributes in their own way. Rosie the Riveter, and then
this guy.
Peter the Playwright. There we go.
He's a bit Irish, too.
He is. But Henry. So, after the war, Henry moved into improv comedy. He did well enough to... that's his move.
No, I'm broken.
Yeah, he really was. Well, this is the thing. His early years were, like, New York City, like, not much going on, like, kind of scraping by as part of some kind of improv comedy troupe.
Like anyone who
whose name
did
escapes him, we'll call them like the Pitfalls or something. It was like, you know, the Pratfalls. I don't remember. Yeah, but eventually he caught the notice of the right people. It was like early TV days, and like a couple TV execs found him. And he debuted on television in 1961. He joined the cast of Brent. You will know this name, the new Steve Allen show.
Steve Allen
from What's My Line?
Oh, Steve Allen.
Yes, exactly.
You have to sort of say it old timey.
You do.
Hey, Rowan.
It was presented by a car at one point. I think it was like the Plymouth. I think it's like, yeah, the Plymouth Steve Allen Hour. Like
the Colgate Hour.
The Colgate Hour. With the Collins I don't know. there's no twins, but there's brothers coming up that he started with. Mm-hmm. He started in the same year as Tim Conway from the Elephant Sketch with Carol Burnett and the Smothers Brothers. But he was only on for like 6 episodes, I think.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But 4 years later, he found lasting television fame, and the reason some of us might know what he's contributed to, when he co-created the Emmy Award-winning series Get Smart with Mel Brooks in 1965.
Oh, okay, I did not know that.
He invented the Cone of Silence, which I'd name drop in later, but like...
Oh, wonderful.
I know, but I wanted to get to it ahead of time. Okay. Buck would also go on to find success in the movie world as a writer. He won an Oscar in 1967 for co-writing The Graduate, and as a director, winning his 2nd Oscar for co-directing, he does everything in Paris, Heaven Can Wait. He co-directed it with Warren Beatty, who apparently was in Heaven Can Wait, which I have not seen.
I've never seen
1978,
that.
Apparently. Award-winning.
Wow, he really means team up or something.
Yeah, right? Like, everything. He's like, I'll do this with you. And it's like, how about you run this one on your own, Buck? And he's like, how about you fuck off?
Buck off!
Buck off! That's great. Oh, our condolences. Okay. One of Buck's most crowning achievements, and the one that takes us into a scandalo territory for today, is his long-running appearances as a guest host on Saturday Night Live. He was the first entrant into the 5-timer club for guest hosts, and then he eventually hosted 10 times. That record stood for, I believe, a decade, and then I think Steve Martin broke it after that.
This all amazes me because I used to be super into SNL.
We're so into SNL currently, and also, like, this name just means so little to me.
I know, I've never heard of this guy.
I know, like, I wrote this and I keep forgetting it. I'm like, fuck Rogers, and I'm like,
fuck
Rogers. Fuck fucking Henry.
37th century.
Okay. Between 1976 and 1980, Buck hosted SNL 10 times, a record only matched by John Goodman, Steve Martin, and Alec Baldwin. All names we all seriously fucking know.
Right?
Yeah, and this guy, like... The reason this became Bad Uncle Week is because I was just looking around to see who died recently, and I was like, oh, I don't recognize that name, and then... And then it became this whole week's segment, which I love so much because it started with Buck.
That's awesome.
And it's about to go into off-the-rails territory in the next paragraph, which makes me very happy.
So did the Buck start here?
The Buck starts here and stops. It comes to a screeching... Actually, it doesn't come to a screeching halt, which is great. This is actually a positive story, I think.
Oh, good.
I think it's a positive story, but the details are, like, squealingly terrible. Just really fun. Again, fictional bad, so this is, like... This is tabloid goss, but for reasons that are not directly Buck Henry.
Fascinating.
Yes, he's orbiting around. He's the cause of, but not the focus. We'll get there. We're getting ahead of ourselves. All right. As with anyone invited back anywhere with the regularity that Buck was invited back to host SNL, he was apparently considered to be a pretty nice guy. For a Hollywood actor, he seems to have led a pretty tame life, so again, he's just kind of orbiting around the edge of controversy. In death, he was praised by his colleagues and by critics alike. There was a lot of praise this week. He doesn't seem to have been the kind of guy who would flirt with any serious controversy, but fortunately, Buck co-hosted SNL a lot in the 70s, when he had SNL's 1970s drugged-up writing staff working as his controversy wingmen.
Oh, fantastic.
This is great. Actually, in this case, wing women, which is even better.
Oh, fantastic.
Okay, this is so good. If you haven't heard of this, this makes me so happy. Okay. In recurring sketches that aired in November 1978 and in his 10th hosting appearance in May 1980, Buck portrayed Uncle Roy, a character that American conservative writer and senior editor Rod Dreher would sum up as a lovable pedophile. In these sketches, Buck portrays a pedophile uncle comedically attempting to molest his two young nieces, Gilda Radner and Lorraine Newman. They squeal in delight as they search their uncle's pockets for hidden treasure, pull up the dresses for him as part of a magic act, and run upstairs to throw down all their dirty laundry for Uncle Roy as he demands, and I quote, littler things, dirtier things.
Oh my god.
Before finally suggesting they come downstairs by polishing the banister.
Oh my god.
Yeah, like... Gilda Radner playing, like, 9. Yeah. As you might expect, the Uncle Roy sketches were somewhat controversial at the time. Asked about it in 2012, Buck Henry said in an interview for the Archive of American Television that his favorite part of the sketch was that they, Uncle Roy and the nieces, really loved each other.
Oh, my.
Buck went on to note that he didn't expect listeners who had been badly mangled by their early history to sympathize with his perspective. And he justified it's so good. The interview's amazing. He justified the content of the sketches by pointing out that they were written by women, Ann Beats and Rosie Schuster, and by calling special attention to the end of the sketches. After the niece's parents return home and thank Uncle Roy for babysitting, they tell him there's no one like Uncle Roy. Roy turns directly to the camera and responds, "Oh, I don't know. I think there's an Uncle Roy in every family." Buck told the Archive interviewer that he saw that line as, and I quote, "a great moment in which possibly I could start interesting conversations in families across America about who was the Uncle Roy in their family."
Oh my god.
Just starting interesting conversations.
Yep, and nothing more. Nothing more.
No. Had a slightly more famous celebrity made these comments, even a couple of years later, we probably all would have heard about it many times over.
Right?
This was pre-Me Too, and Buck's career was almost entirely pre-internet, so he was able to avoid any outbreaks of viral outrage at the time. It would take 5 more years for Uncle Roy to make headlines, and then it would be all about another SNL player, former U.S. Senator Al Franken. In a column imaginatively titled Al Franken and Uncle Roy... the aforementioned American conservative writer, Ron Dreher, dredged up the memory of Uncle Roy to Tara Franken, who at the time was facing sexual harassment allegations. He was trying to tar him for daring to be part of a sketch about humorous pedophilia. As for what that part was, Dreher was a bit confused. He first claimed that he was unable to find out whether or not Franken wrote the Uncle Roy script, before noting in a very quick correction that two readers had managed to find that, no, it was two women who had written it. Dreyer notes that Franken may have not written the Uncle Roy sketch, but he was part of the team that aired it. This is enough to make Franken the bad guy, but Dreyer very generously sums up, and I quote, "I'm not saying that Al Franken is soft on pedophilia." Complete with exclamation points. Great.
Oh my god.
He goes on to tell us what he is saying, which is some nonsense about pop cultural evolution, and presumably an explanation on why, despite being part of the writing team of American Conservative, Ron Dreyer is not personally or morally responsible for every opinion that that publication mentions. Oddly, Dreyer's column doesn't weigh in on the morality of Buck Henry's willingness to portray a molester uncle for the sake of comedy. In the wake of his death on Wednesday, social media hordes finally did weigh in on Buck and his career. Unfortunately for him, the verdict was extremely positive. Buck, as it turns out, will be remembered more for the satirist who created concepts like the Cone of Silence and not for some pervy uncles who give lazy editors the flimsiest of reasons to attack Al Franken. And that's our hot goss.
I did not see any of that coming.
I never had heard of that character.
What the fuck?
I admittedly
heard
did.
Of Buck Rogers, but I hadn't heard.
Well, this is different. This is not. I know. I had never heard of Buck Henry either, but I did a very. It's hard to search for that sketch without.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
I was like, I don't want to search for that. Like, no. But
and I can totally see them being like, how about we don't digitize this?
That's the thing. It seems anyway from a cursory search that they didn't. Just the transcripts are available online, and they are really disturbing.
Some things are better left buried and burned and salted and flooded.
But his video for the, what is the Archive of American Television, is so good. It's so good. His take on it now, if it was like, if anyone of any like extreme note made those comments today, it would be taken so badly.
Oh my god. Please.
So terribly.
The worst possible option.
Yeah, but it was fine. It was fine.
Because no one gave a fuck.
No, and it was kind of nice because he died this week and everyone was like, he was a really talented writer and comedian. And that was the end of the conversation. And I was like, that's really lovely. I should use a podcast I'm part of to say terrible things about this. And that's our hot goss.
Hooray!
And for our lukewarm goss, we're going to keep on the theme of bad uncles. This is our controversial uncle.
Ooh.
Mm.
So, okay.
Yeah, because that one wasn't.
Well, he was a fictional uncle. He was very, he was definitely a controversial uncle, but this is a controversial real uncle.
Okay.
Yeah, there's no fiction here. Well, near the end, there's mentions of possible fiction. We'll see.
That's worth it.
Okay. Speaking of fiction, okay, you've watched The Crown. I know that. Have you watched The Crown?
I have. It's very nice.
Okay. What can you tell me about the Queen's, our current Queen's, most scandalous uncle?
Oh. The abdicator.
Yeah, just that he fucked a Nazi and was probably a Nazi.
Ran to Paris.
Mickey's closer to being right, but you're both potentially wrong.
The American divorcee.
No. A different uncle entirely.
Oh.
There's a third?
I had no fucking idea.
There's always more.
There's so much royal progeny. This is great. Well, that's not great, but there's another potential controversial one. Okay,
one
so,
down.
The one you guys were talking about was Edward VIII.
Okay.
The abdicator. Yeah. Okay, so Edward VIII was a Nazi sympathizer, to say the least. But it was the 1930s, for this brother, and half of high society Britain were Nazi sympathizers. So, you know, that's not going to be our deciding factor. So, Edward's younger brother, Prince George, the Duke of Kent, was much more forward-thinking in his controversy courting. He opted for a much more avant-garde cocaine addiction and some good old-fashioned sexual deviancy.
Fantastic.
I love this name. George Edward Alexander Edmund Saxe Coburg Gotha was born on December... That's so good.
They can't breathe.
It's so good. That's like the most complicated password to a speakeasy ever.
Oh my god.
Anyway, George.
George.
Was born on December 20th, 1902.
Gigi.
This is perfect. He was the fourth child of King George V and Queen Mary, so that would be Queen Lizzie's grandparents.
Okay.
He had the usual stuffy royal upbringing, and then he surprised everyone by growing up to be tall and handsome, a rarity in the Saxe Coburg Gotha Windsor family. In fine royal tradition...
Sorry, how many times did you practice that?
Saxe Coburg Gotha? It's, that part's so easy. It's the George Edward Alexander Edmund Saxe Coburg Gotha.
God damn.
It's the Edward Alexander Edmund. You don't expect to go back to Ed so fast.
Yeah, and it's an Edmund.
If they added in, like, an Edwin, I'd be so lost. It would be impossible.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So, in fine royal tradition, George picked out the most attractive of his relatives, his chic and slightly sassy second cousin, Princess Marina of Greece and Denmark, and married her in 1934. George and his hot cousin would go on to have three children, who they raised in what was considered at the time to be the hippest house in pre-World War II London.
Ooh.
I've seen pictures. Then. They're actually not that bad. Like, they actually look kind of chic, and he's not bad looking for, you know, like, really, who's the best we have? Harry, who looks completely unrelated and suspicious.
Yeah.
Welcome to Canada, Harry. And, we'll take you. Yeah, out of all of them, we'll take you. And William, that's gone downhill so fast.
Oh, my God.
I think Harry just wants to get closer to Michelle.
Obama?
Yeah, they're best buds.
I love that I knew who you were talking about right away, and I don't disagree with you. That'd be a hot power couple, but Barack is just, like, so dreamy, you can't.
You just can't. Break that heart.
Yeah. Oh, there's something later in this that's going to make you so happy. We actually touch on Grey Gardens. I know. Okay, we'll get there.
Scandalous, really?
George was well-educated and charming. He was good at sports. He could dance an award-winning tango.
Ooh.
He apparently signed up incognito to a tango contest in London and won.
That's fantastic.
He spoke possibly five languages, and he created London's latest fashion trends along with his older brother, the Abdicator. They were quite the jet setters. Most of all, George liked to fuck, and fucking got him into some trouble. According to what I love the name of this website for a story about this guy, therake.com. I know, like, he's such an old rake. Like, I love that. According to therake.com, in the 1920s, George's brother, the brief King Edward VIII, had to wean him off a morphine and cocaine addiction, following an affair with an American socialite named Kiki Preston. Kiki was known as the girl with the silver syringe.
Oh my God.
Which seems like a tip-off that she should best be avoided, but George liked to live dangerously. George's relationship with Kiki led to allegations of bisexuality when George was rumored to have had menage a trois with Kiki and the son of an Argentine ambassador. Fun fact number one in this story.
Mm.
Rumor has it George fucked the sons of at least two different Argentine ambassadors.
he had a very specific type.
Apparently. Which, look, come on. Let's who's going to blame him? Andy dances the tango so he can possibly stand a chance to get it?
Oh, his Done. Hips are made for moving that way.
Mm-hmm. Kiki is said to have given birth to George's illegitimate son, a boy named Michael Temple Canfield, before later throwing herself out a hotel window in the mid-40s.
Oh, good.
Fun fact number two, Brent. Michael Temple eventually married Lee Radziwill, the younger sister of Jackie Kennedy, who started the original Grey Gardens documentary.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. All rich people are connected.
Of course. Money begets money. Begets
true.
Money.
And Epstein committed suicide, now shut up. Alright. The rake also claims that George continued banging both men and women after his hot cousin marriage, and most scandalous of all, he was even said to be hot for Florence Mills, an African-American cabaret star.
Le gasp.
Yes.
Scandalo. On the male side, George was alleged to be banging Queen Lizzie's notorious art teacher, Soviet spy, and fixture from this season of The Crown, whose name escapes me at the moment. I did not write that one down. But you know, the one who gets yelled at in the museum.
Yeah.
He gets, like, burnt.
That was an excellent episode that you just, like...
That was fantastic.
Oh,
yes, but so apparently good. Her uncle was banging him. He was also allegedly banging yet another cousin, Prince Louis Ferdinand of Prussia.
Well done.
He was rumored to be dating playwright Noel Coward for almost 20 years.
Impressive.
Allegedly, Georgia and Noel were even caught by British security agents doing drag in the West End. Which, the way I've written that, sounds like the security agents were doing drag in the West End, but it was actually the prince and Noel Coward.
Hey, undercover, overcover.
I was fine with that imagery either way. I was enjoying it, but, you know, facts.
Facts are facts.
Facts are facts. At the time, homosexuality, facts, was still illegal in Britain, and so all these stories started causing real headaches for the royal family. Being a royal headache for the royal... Being a royal pain... The pain for the royal family isn't necessarily super healthy,
mm-hmm.
As conspiracy theories have led us to believe.
It can sometimes go horrible.
Mm-hmm. So when George died at age 39, persistent rumors swirled that he had been whacked on the order of the British government.
Beaten to death by a crown. How suspicious.
What did happen to George, you ask? Officially, he died in an air crash on August 25th, 1942, along with 14 other people, while en route to Iceland for a troop morale-boosting tour. Locals who rushed to the crash site claim to have found George among the bodies with a case of 100 kroner notes handcuffed to his wrist.
Okay.
Kroner, Swedish currency, weren't usable in Iceland at the time, so this raised some questions. As did, like, a ton of other shit that I didn't even include here, including that the only survivor, apparently, rather than, like, trying to get help or sticking around, ran in the opposite direction from, like, civilization and hid out in a cabin for a few days.
Okay.
Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff. Also raising questions, the fact that the aircraft's captain, a veteran pilot, oh yeah, and this all took place in a flying boat.
Okay.
Which is apparently a thing. But, yeah, so there was a lot of... I kept using the words, like, aircraft, because I didn't want to say plane, because it was a flying boat.
Flying...
But basically, boat. Like, a water lander.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like a pontoon. Flying boat.
Well, like a pontoon, like, is what I'm like thinking of in my head.
Like, from Tailspin?
I keep wanting to go, woo, but that's DuckTales. Yes.
Same universe. Yeah, like the... totally same universe, though.
Officially, no.
No, there's a crossover.
No, officially.
What? Okay, no, there's absolutely a pop culture podcast coming up about this. Yeah. What a great opportunity for you to plug our pop culture podcast. We'll have some gin.
Check out, please, won't you shut up while he fills his gob with delightful gin. We're going to talk about DuckTales, apparently.
The DuckTales Tailspin crossover.
On the other show, yes.
Which you can find on iTunes by searching things.
Sometimes that works.
Sometimes you can't. And then you have to go on YouTube and look up My Gender is Cinema.
Yeah. And then from there, you'll be able to find Please, Won't You Shut Up.
Mm-hmm. And also another show that will say Blake Hensley and Brett Robertson starring in Bad Uncles. Oh, not true. Flying boats.
Okay. Flying boats.
So the pilot was a veteran pilot, like literally like an RAF pilot. He apparently took the craft off course for no reason. He was leaving from a town in Scotland, which was on, like, you know, the...
As you do.
Yeah, well, as you do. On the west coast of Scotland, he was flying to Iceland. So one would presume you fly over water. And it, anyway, it crashed on land.
I see.
In Scotland. I'm making a lot of faces at this, which don't translate for radio, but neither does the term radio to this generation. It's fine. So anyway, they crashed in Scotland overland because the veteran pilot literally went off course for no apparent reason, and then he descended through the clouds without checking first to see whether or not they were over water, and then they weren't, and then they crashed into land. So that's weird.
That's bullshit.
Would you like more?
Yeah.
All right.
If William Shatner's taught me anything, that's like a reenactment just waiting to happen.
Right.
Hopefully. The only survivor of the crash, Andy Jack... that would be the guy who ran around and I believe hid in a cabin. I'd have to double check, but I think so. He claimed to have been sworn to secrecy about what happened after the fact. Also helpful, many documents related to George's flight, including the original flight plan, have all gone missing. Extra helpful, George's personal papers are all said to be locked away by Buckingham Palace. Although, in all fairness, that's more likely because they're filled with hot bisexual smut and not about details that would warrant a, you know, hitman conspiracy on a...
I'm so intrigued.
Doesn't appear in The Crown at all, because it's pre that, but he's fucking fascinating.
My God.
I know. I was so excited about this. I was just randomly, like, you know, booting around the internet, just wondering who's the worst uncle out there, and I was like, this seems interesting.
Like, how is this the first time I've ever heard of this?
I know. I actually, you know what, in total fairness,
Scotland. I was like, I haven't heard of this.
I know. I was like, I keep saying I know a lot, but it's just, it was so fun to research. I kept looking into, like, I thought about the Queen's uncle. I was like, oh, well, he's famous and terrible, but everyone knows that story. Then I was like, what if she has any other uncles?
And yeah,
yes, she do.
Idle, rich idiots.
Yes, cocaine, morphine,
reason they wear shiny
addict,
things.
And yes. Bisexual, fun,
look,
philanderer.
Here.
He sounds like a great time.
Oh, I bet he was fun.
Especially in Argentina.
However, in case any listeners are still thinking that some cocaine and a couple of Argentine thruples aren't enough to tip the scales from Edward being the worst into George being the most controversial, he was also a Nazi sympathizer, so
oh,
yay!
God damn it!
Well, yeah, you know. Saxo Bergava. Mm-hmm.
Someone is not a fan.
Not, oh my God. I really hope... I love that the puppy was near the microphone for that. I really hope that made it in.
You can totally just see it over
oh,
there.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah. Well done.
Honey, you should get an official credit for that.
And honey.
And honey. Honey.
Cold goss. Cold goss. Go we're not. So we couldn't go Methuselah's uncle. We couldn't go glacial goss. But okay. We are going to the 7th century Jutland. Or Jutland.
Jutland.
It's probably like Jutland or Jutland, but Jutland.
Yeah.
It's Jutland.
I've only ever heard Jutland.
Yeah. We're going to go there to find Fang. Our bad uncle number 3. So this is the legendary uncle. Fang.
Fang?
Fang. F-E-N-G. Fang.
Ain't no Fang.
Fang.
Ain't no Fang but a chicken wing, yes. Fang appears as a Jutish or Jutish chieftain in a 12th century book called the Gesta Denorum by the awesomely named historian and author Saxo Grammaticus.
Oh, that's awesome.
Have you heard any of this?
No, okay, oddly good. Enough.
I want you to chime in when it becomes apparent what I'm talking about.
Okay.
But I don't want you to give away the farm.
Right.
I just want you to be like, aha. Elementary, indeed, yes. In junior high, my dear Watson. Yeah. According to Saxo Grammaticus, Fang and his brother, Horwendil, succeeded their father, Gerwendil, to become the rulers of Jutland in the 7th century. For the first few years, Horwendil did most of the ruling and everything went pretty well. Then he got bored, and he decided to take up piracy and to go fight the king of Norway. So he left Fang at home to do the paperwork. Horwendil passed the next 3 years in what Saxo Grammaticus calls valiant deeds of war, and he got so famous fighting and pillaging that the king of Denmark sent Horwendil his daughter Garutha as a gift. These names are hard, by the way.
Oh god, yes.
They're so elvish. Horwendil.
Garutha.
And Garutha. Horwendil married Garutha. And then begat Methuselah. Yeah. And then soon after, though, she did do the queenly thing and she popped him out a prince. Whose name we will give you later.
Pew pew.
Ooh. So, Fang, whose brother, Horwendil, has been getting all his fame and brightness and now an heir, Fang's all pissed and he's jealous because he's been hanging out in the accounting office, essentially collecting all of Jutland's taxes for years while his brother's off, like, you know, being a pirate and fighting the king of Norway and, like, being awesome.
Fun stuff.
And valiant deeds of war. So he's pretty crabby about this. And he's also pretty mad because he thinks Garuth is pretty hot. So he's just not down with any of this at all. He takes it on the chin for like a decade or more. And then finally he snaps and he chops up his brother.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So now that Horwendil is dead and Fang is the sole ruler of Jutland, Fang decrees that he's going to take Garutha as his queen. This is not weird or suspicious, because Fang openly admits that he killed his brother, but he says he did it to save Garutha, essentially, from an abusive spouse.
Okay, so, then.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say that she Garutha on him?
I would not say that.
Oh,
and
my.
I hate you for saying it. I love it. The apparently extremely credulous courtiers of 7th century Jutland had apparently no problem with any of this story. But Horwendil and Garutha's son did. So he couldn't do anything about it, though, and he thought he didn't want his uncle thinking that he might want to avenge his dad one day. You're making a face. I'm happy you're making a face this early. Okay.
My God.
I hope listeners are making a face, but we're going to leave it. So he smeared shit all over himself. He smeared shit all over himself and rolled around all on the ground, howling all the time, so that everyone would assume he lost his damn mind. Saxo, who I love for all of this, describes the prince as, and I quote, "some absurd abortion due to a mad fit of destiny." If I ever go back on Twitter, my profile is just going to say an absurd abortion due to a mad fit of destiny.
That's definitely the worst review that's ever gotten.
Fang's crazy nephew spent all this time sitting by the fire in, you know, this court castle, poking the fire with sticks, sharpening the sticks, and then poking the fire some more. He did this all day, every day.
That's the point.
He did this all day, every day, and then just piled up his sticks by the fire.
Delightful.
Faggot.
Right? I tried. It was so hard not to make a faggot joke in there, talking about a bundle of sticks. Literally, oh my god, and I have to make the point for later that he had, like, a whole bundle of sticks at this point after, like, this is what he did all day just to show how dumb and insane he was. Okay. Still, Fang, our bad uncle, our legendarily bad uncle, worried that his nephew might be faking crazy, so he had his men take him out to the woods and tempt him with his naked foster sister, because apparently royalty in every era just can't quit incest.
I insist.
Yeah.
Oh. The prince had been warned that this might happen. So when Fengsmend offered him his foster sister, he dragged her off to a distant marsh where the men couldn't see them, and then he banged her in private, and then they came back and they both lied about it.
Wait, so he banged her anyway?
Yep.
Why?
Because of his naturally lustful passions that they were testing to see if he was faking insanity and couldn't resist his natural lust if he wasn't really insane.
Good lord.
And he's not really insane, so apparently he couldn't resist his natural lust for his fucking foster sister. And so he dragged her off to a distant fen, as it was in the original, and then banged her in private.
And they didn't think, well, there he goes. I wonder if there's a reason.
Well, if I may continue. Because it was the stupidly credulous 7th century Jutland courtiers, everyone believed that they hadn't fucked, which could only mean that, you know, the prince was crazy for real.
Oh my god.
But smart Uncle Feng was still suspicious. So he arranged for his nephew and his wife to have some private catching up time together. And then he had one of his men hide and eavesdrop on them. I presume the face you made earlier is being made double now.
That was I had to be up at 6 a.m.
Oh, okay. So you still haven't figured this out yet.
Oh, God. No. I figured it out. I know exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
It's a very good rendition of it. I'm trying to say this in a way that won't give
I know,
it away.
I know. We're totally going to give away the farm later. It's fine. You look like you're giving us a mystification face, which is good, because I hope that most of the audience is as well.
Making me crave a ham sandwich.
Oh, dear. All right. Okay, so the prince figured that his uncle would probably be spying. So, of course, he flapped around like a giant bird for a while.
Yeah.
Being a giant bird, he needed a perch, so he jumped up on top of a nearby bale of straw. The straw felt weird, though, because that's where the eavesdropper was hiding that his uncle had sent. So the prince did what any normal person would do, and he stabbed the bale a bunch, killing the eavesdropper who was hiding inside.
Oh, yeah, well, you gotta do what you gotta do.
Mm-hmm. Now, either the prince was starting to honestly lose it, or he was just really committing to the bit, because he chopped the eavesdropper into bits, boiled the bits, and then threw them out for the pigs to eat. Meanwhile, his mother's watching all of this, and she starts freaking out and going, "Oh, what have you done with your life?" on him. And he, of course, is doing all this for his dad. Meanwhile, his mom's apparently moved on and is, like, pretty happy with Uncle Fugger.
Yeah, no, she always seemed the brightest.
Uh-huh. So he's pretty pissed about this, so he reacts very poorly, and he calls her a whore, and again, to quote, a most infamous woman, and more importantly, he compares her to a horse because brute beasts are naturally inclined to pair indiscriminately.
Oh my god, guy.
Saxo Grammaticus is wonderful. That's all I have to say about that. The prince tells his mom that he's not really crazy, he's doing all this for her, and apparently she learns her important lesson of the week because she decides to walk a more virtuous path and to set the fires of the past above the seductions of the present. Because apparently murderous brother-in-law Dick is just that excellent.
Just apparently.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Feng, he's now searching high and low for his eavesdropper. When he couldn't find him anywhere, he asked his nephew, who essentially told him that the man had gone to play with the pigs. That sounded like hot, crazy nonsense to everyone else in the court, of course. But to Feng, it sounded a little too sassy, so he decided to kill his nephew.
Yeah, well, finally.
The prince, though, no matter how crazy, is the grandson of the King of Denmark. Remember, his mom was a nice little daughter gift from the king.
That is fair.
And Feng's afraid to piss him off. He also figures his wife's going to get mad if he murders her son. And she's already stopped putting out for whatever reason now. He doesn't know why. So Feng decides to send his nephew to England, along with a note for the King of England that says basically, "Yo, it's your boy from Jutland. Do me a solid and kill this asshole for me. Okay, thanks, bye." Feng picks out his two best men, who, as you'll learn in a minute, are terrible. He gives them the letter, and they grab Prince Crazy and hop on a ship to Britain. Okay, so at this point in the story, I already fucking love this story.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's really fun.
This has already gone, like, to
I'm not going to ruin places. Where it is obviously going if everyone hasn't gotten there yet, because it is so good, but I had so much fun reading this and writing so this, but the next bit is fucked. It's so fun. It goes so much better. Okay. So, that night, the prince searches Fang's best men while they're asleep, and of course he finds the letter, and apparently it was written in number 2 pencil because he erases the letter. And he rewrites it as, "Yo, it's your boy from Jutland. Do me a solid and kill this asshole's two guards for me. Okay, thanks, bye." P.S. This asshole is actually a fucking genius, and you should marry your daughter off to him so we can be bros-in-law for real, bro. So the three of them get to England. Feng's men give the king this letter. He reads it and is like, this is hilarious. What an adorable practical joke this guy's playing on his two guards. Why don't you guys all sit down and have a good time?
Lucky.
Right? Okay. But the two guards go and eat and have a good time. And the prince just fucking sits there sneering at his food. Just like being like, he's the biggest dink guest ever.
Well,
but his reasoning, as you're about to learn, is flawless and amazing.
Okay.
So the king's curious why. So he sends sends another eavesdropper off to spy on the prince. And the eavesdropper happens to catch the prince saying that he wouldn't eat anything because the bread and the meat stank like corpses. Plus the banquet was given by a king with slave eyes and a queen who flounced around acting like a slave.
Oh my god.
So the king hears about this and he's pissed off.
What wonderful mouth this guy had.
I know, but, you know, the king's fairly wise. The king's the most patient person in the land. So he figures before killing this guy, he's like, man, maybe I'll ask around and see if there's anything behind all of this slander. So he asks the butcher. And the butcher's like, oh yeah, we got broken into and the pigs ate the robber before I could haul his corpse away. Sorry, my bad.
Oh my god.
So then he talks to the baker. And the baker's like, oh, that wheat? I got a super cheap deal on that wheat because it was harvested off a battlefield. You couldn't tell, could you?
Oh.
So then the king talks to his mother. And he's like, is the old king my dad? And she's like, of course, who else would I bang? And so he asks her again, and she's like, no doubt, I seriously only bang the king. He's your dad. Where's all this coming from anyway? And then he asks her a third time, and she's like, fine, I banged a slave. He's your dad. What are you, Mr. Perfect? Fuck you. So now the king's all, oh my god, I'm a slave bastard. And also, holy shit, this super rude Judish prince is, or Judish or Juddish.
Judish?
Juddish. Judish. Anyway, this prince is smart as hell. And he's like, he's more impressed with this prince than he is mad at him. He's like super into this prince.
Fucking told me.
But he also insulted his wife.
Yes.
So now he goes and asks around to some of his friends who were at the banquet the night before. And all of them are like, oh, your wife? Yeah, she basically dressed like she's out of The Handmaid's Tale. Her hems didn't even touch the floor. This is like all literal, the closest interpretation of this.
Whoa.
And she picked her fucking teeth at the banquet and ate what she picked out of her teeth. She's a fucking serf.
No couth.
Oh, no couth at all. So that's the, wonderful. Yeah, school on Sunday. Ain't got no class. So the king's life's a mess. So he figures he better send his daughter away because apparently the whole family's the fucking Beverly Hillbillies. So he figures, this is so good. So he figures, fuck it. Who better to send her off with than fucking Captain Wonderkin, the prince from Jutland or Jutland? So he marries her off to him, and the princess and the prince head back to Jutland. Once they get there, the prince changes out of the nice suit he's been wearing in England, gets back into his rags, and smears himself with shit again. The princess is presumably like, wow, some honeymoon, and very impressed. They head back to Feng's court, where everyone's in the middle of having a fucking super fun feast celebrating the death of the crazy prince.
Okay.
Because they're all sure he's fucking dead.
God, yes.
So the prince jumps out into the banquet hall, smeared in all of his shit, presumably shouting, squawk, squawk, motherfuckers. I'm a giant bird, and you can't kill a giant bird. Based on past behavior. So everyone's fucking horrified at first, and then they're all like, oh my god, that giant shitty bird somehow cheated fate through craziness in his own stink. That's fucking hilarious. So the prince is dancing around, keeping everyone in hysterics, and he's grabbing more hooch and filling everyone's glass with whatever they're drinking, and they all toast him over and over and over again because he's such a stupid bird. Everyone gets super fucking drunk, and eventually all the courtiers pass out on the floor of the banquet hall. Once they're all asleep, the prince hauls down the giant wool tapestry that covers all of the walls inside and out, just to how big this thing is.
Yeah.
Pulls it over top of all the sleeping courtiers. Then he grabs his sharpened stakes from beside the fire.
Oh my god.
Pegs it down all around so they're trapped under it and sets the fucking thing on fire.
Wow.
Meanwhile, fucking Uncle Feng. He is apparently a complete party pooper because he's been in bed for ages. He went to bed like long earlier.
Oh my god.
So the prince heads over to his room, wakes him up, and is like, oh hi, guess what? You were right. I wasn't crazy this whole time. Yeah, I'm mad you killed my dad. Yeah, I'm mad you banged my mom. Oh, also, all of your courtiers are on fire, and I'm going to stab you. And then he does. I believe with his own sword.
Shit.
Presumably the prince and his mom and the princess live happily ever after, although I'm not sure where, because he burned the whole castle down. The prince, in case you haven't guessed it by now, was called Amleth.
Yeah.
Which is the laziest pig Latin-esque inspiration for a central character I've ever heard, Ilium Way Aikspear Shay. So there are really two bad uncles in this last story, Feng and King Claudius, who Shakespeare pulled from the Gesta Danorum, or Deeds of the Danes, when he wrote Hamlet. And we have a special feature, Word of the Day.
Oh, good.
Avunculicide.
Avunculicide.
The murder of an uncle. Can I use it in a sentence? Yes, I can. Amleth, or Hamlet, committed avunculicide when he killed Fang with a sword, although for the life of me, I can't figure out why he didn't also get the fiery tapestry treatment, because that shit is awesome.
Right? Include that shit. That was so good.
With the pegs he was fucking sharpening from day one.
God.
He's like, oh, me, day one, when I had all that shit all over my face? Yeah, I was planning to pull this shit tapestry down over all y'all and light y'all on fire.
Oh, I knew how many there would be, and I made sure that I had every one of you fucks.
You figured out really early that it was based on Hamlet.
Well, like,
or that it's what Hamlet's based on.
It was when the king died and the mother married the uncle, or just when they, and it was just like, well, I know Hamlet was based on a few things, but holy fuck, we're getting a little close in orbit here.
I figured the most, like, punch you in the face was the eavesdropper being killed.
That was a really big one as well.
Yeah.
Oh, and the crazy.
But the smearing himself in shit and, like, them trying to get him to fuck his foster sister in the woods, and, like, or him successfully fucking foster sister in the woods. Oh, I fucking loved it. I had so much fun with that one.
That was wonderful. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. It was a pleasure to finally get the fuck around to writing a script for this show. Again, right. It only took, what, 6 episodes in? You had to give us real credits, and then I felt like part of a team, and I was like, I should actually contribute something to this.
I browbeat you into doing work. Yay!
How will you get me to write a script for next time?
Fuck.
Well, next time's on you, and it's...
Yes, and next time comes... soon, because I actually have the script with me right now.
And if you're listening late, it comes right now.
Right now! Right now! Right now.
Hey, Nova Scotia. There are plenty of ways to get outdoors and show your local love this winter. Why not get outside for an adventure? You could hit the slopes at one of Nova Scotia's incredible ski hills, head out for a hike along the coast, or let all your stress just melt away at a Nordic spa. Visit NovaScotia.com for more great ideas and packages. And no matter how you choose to make the most of winter, be sure to stay safe and support local. Hey, Nova Scotia. There are plenty of ways to get outdoors and show your local love this winter. Why not get outside for an adventure? You could hit the slopes at one of Nova Scotia's incredible ski hills, head out for a hike along the coast, or let all your stress just melt away at a Nordic spa. Visit NovaScotia.com for more great ideas and packages. And no matter how you choose to make the most of winter, be sure to stay safe and support local.